serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization.
That was President Franklin D. Roosevelt imploring the nation to join him in prayer on June 6, 1944, in light of the daring invasion of Normandy. You can hear that entire prayer at the end of the podcast version of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com. It's a prayer Tom Rice has heard so many times he's lost count, and he's probably lost count of how many times he's jumped out of airplanes, too. He just did it again over Normandy this week at age 96. And we'll jump back into this 101st Airborne Veterans D-Day story now.
These guys were coming down the road. It must have been 8 or 10 of them coming down the road. And we clicked them and met them. And we stood up and kind of conversed. And one of them came to me and said, "I've got a hand grenade with the pin pulled. You cannot put the pin back in a hand grenade. It's not possible because the bend is bent."
Right.
And he probably didn't have the pin anyway. So here he is with a hand grenade, squeezing it like almighty. And if you ever let loose of it, that spoon goes up. You know what the hand grenade is like.
Yeah.
And it fires the cap, and it goes down the train of powder, and then 5 seconds it goes. Oh, he said, "I got a hand grenade with the pin pulled." I said, "Okay, give it to me." Had everybody get down. I got down and rolled over to the ditch, dropped it in the ditch, rolled back, and by the time I got to the middle of the road, the thing exploded, and I'm covered with water. So we went on down the road a little further. No enemy. What is this, the game we're playing here?
Hold on a second. Why did you want the hand grenade? Why did you put yourself in greater danger?
Because I was responsible for those guys, and they looked like I didn't recognize. Here's one of the things we tried to learn is the profile if we saw these guys at night. Mm-hmm. And our maneuvers and their voice. I wasn't sure. There was a number of them, and I wasn't sure about their voices or their profiles. But I felt that things were friendly enough. I just took it on myself. I was a ranking guy there, even mm-hmm. though I may not have been. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I found out who the guy was that had a hand grenade, and he was a lieutenant. And I'm just a staff sergeant.
But your leadership qualities,
there you go,
rose to the occasion.
Yeah, right. I had to.
Yeah. So, sorry for interrupting. I'm sure a lot of people are saying, "Wait, if that guy—that's his problem. That's not your problem."
So we broke up into groups and went on down the road. I'm saying to these guys, "Nothing's happening here, but I saw a house on the side of the road, about 50 yards back," and I said, "We got to investigate this." So I set about 5 of them around to the back of the house. And Floyd Martin and me and another guy went to the front of the house. I said to Floyd Martin, "Don't bang on the door like an ugly American. Just knock, you know." He banged on it with his rifle, but you could hear it from probably 2 kilometers away. After about 30 seconds or so, a Frenchman came to the door. Blasé as could be. Now, you wouldn't believe this. In a long, white nightgown from shoulder to floor. Mm-hmm. With a white tousled nightcap.
Wow.
With a dish with a candle in it lighted. Now, if you were in that situation, what would you think or say or do?
That's a good question. What'd you do?
I started to laugh.
I think I probably would have laughed.
I started to laugh like you can't believe. And the reason being, I suddenly recognized that's the Christmas Carol play, uh-huh. Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
I saw that. And it looked like...
It looked like Scrooge.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. So he didn't respond to anything, so I just pushed him aside and went in. 3 or 4 of the guys followed behind me, and I unloaded the map and put it on the floor and tried to get him to tell us where we were. He finally saw the word Carentan, and he pointed in that direction. His wife came out from another door dressed the same way.
Uh-huh.
That was no laugh. I didn't laugh at that one. After trying to talking with him and not frightening him, he said he'll want to be excused for a minute. So we did okay. So he went out and he got 6 rounds of ammunition. He gave us 4 and he kept 2. And so we left right away. Assured him we're not going to do anything. Went out on the road again with 3 of us, walking in the ditch real low. And a lieutenant ahead of me yelled, "Hey, Sergeant, come here." Now, he was standing at a large gate where cattle would go enter and come out. and it was a pasture field in there. He was standing there and said, "Sergeant, I want you to walk around this field on the edge. I'm going to stay right here and wait." He had a carbine rifle, a short one, with a metal stock on it. This guy was bound to, had it in his mind, he's going to get a sniper. I'm a bait.
Thanks a lot.
I knew it was exactly what he's doing, so I walked that perimeter, 600 and some yards, and I had my trigger finger ready to go, and I had that submachine gun up, you know, looking into the trees. Mm-hmm. I got back to the point where he set me off. He was gone. I learned a couple things. Never arrive at your point of departure as a final destination, because they could have seen it, could have watched me. 50-some years later, New York staff writer called, wanting to come out and interview me. He took 100 pictures of me for all what reason, I don't know. Then he started asking questions. And on the question period, he asked me to explain some heroism. I said they were all heroes. And then it hit me. I'll explain what happened right there. And I told him what happened, what that lieutenant did. I said, "This is a situation of cowardness. They printed that story. They printed my picture with it. And I hope that son of a gun saw it."
If he made it through the war.
If he made it, yeah. I figured this guy's going to get somebody killed. But so we wandered around there, out in fields, and a horse was had been hit with shrapnel. A medic I had with me, Robert Schill, he patched him up with sulfadiazone, and we used the horse as a protection to get to some other point. Went into a house, searching the houses, and I crossed a window, and I had a rifle shot come through for the sniper. It hit just in front of me and caught me in the leg. It was a hard, like I was hit like a baseball bat almost, you know. So I just pulled the pant leg up and pulled it out and put it in my pocket. I never know what happened to it after that.
So this is your first day.
Yeah.
And you're
first
already
day.
Hit.
First day. This is June 6th.
And you've already got a wound in your leg.
Yeah, I got a wound that I didn't pay too much attention to. It didn't bother me that much, crying out loud. I'm not going to medic and say, "Give me a Purple Heart or make a record of this baloney." We were in the most exclusive fraternity that occupies space on the face of the earth. That is a foot soldier and the airborne on patrol in enemy territory. That is a fraternity. There's not many guys in that.
No, and there were a lot that didn't get to come home.
Yeah.
And you have a very unique way of honoring the guys that you served with, and especially those who didn't come home. Tell me how you got the idea to jump out of an airplane every June 6th.
Risk taker again.
Yeah.
Full of energy. I had 51 years of long distance running. There's got to be something else out there I can do.
Yeah.
You see? I had 44 years of high school and junior college teaching.
What'd you teach?
I taught U.S. government and U.S. history, and I never told anybody in the class about my activity in the 101st.
Wow.
Except once in page 476, chapter 24 in the history textbook. There was a picture of a lieutenant with, and I'm sure you've seen it, it's made a postage stamp out of it, with a piece of cardboard. That's number 23 written on it, and a lot of guys around him. All of the guys trying to get eager to get into the conversation with General Eisenhower.
The picture in the textbook gave you the platform to share a little bit with your class.
Yeah, that's the only time, and we only spent just a short period of time on it, and only in one class.
So all those years, you didn't share your own personal story, but you kept running, like you said. You're obviously still in great shape, so it was just a few years ago that you started this annual tradition? How old were you when you did that first commemorative jump?
In the 91, 92.
Every June 6th, you go up in a tandem jump and skydive.
See, I'm not going to compromise this knee. This knee has been replaced.
What do you get from that when it's June 6th, a day that you experienced from start to finish, that guys just like you were killed fighting that day, and you jump out of that airplane to skydive and then parachute to the ground? What do you think of? What's the significance of that?
Well, the idea is to honor those guys as best I can, and that's the only way I can do it. For what they did, those that were captured, killed, wounded, whatever. A couple of them in Fort Rosecrans that I know.
That's the
I don't go methodically through the whole process. It's a compounded thrill that's part of my risk nature to free fall 9,000 feet, mm-hmm. you know. So I'm enjoying this thing like mad. I'm posing for the photographer.
Yeah.
You didn't see the picture.
I did. Two thumbs up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll put this picture on hometownheroesradio.com in the Facebook page, but here you are skydiving. I can see the wind resistance on you, and you've got both arms out with two thumbs up.
Yeah. We're having a great time.
I can tell you're having a great time, but you're also drawing attention to those who didn't come home.
Then part of the idea is to draw as much attention publicity-wise, although I didn't think of that at the moment, but that's what's happened.
Is there a thrill out there that you haven't achieved yet that you're waiting for?
I pegged my livelihood to 101.
Okay.
101 airborne.
You want to go like a screaming eagle,
Yeah. The guys have got a formula where they're going to use an old World War II helmet, and in it is going to be some kind of a liquor concoction that's going to knock you off your feet if you stand on a ladder 6 feet tall. And the last guy in the regiment who is still alive is going to have to drink that concoction and jump off of that 6-foot ladder. I'm not looking to that one, but
I think you might have a good shot of drinking out of that helmet, though.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't. I'm not. I don't drink.
Uh-huh.
I never drank. Never smoked. Whatever. Maybe that's why I'm that old.
I think that's why you're that young. Yeah. Well, one thing I want to make sure I say is thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story, and thank you for keeping the memory of your fellow airborne troops and World War II veterans in general in the consciousness, in mind. What would you say you're most proud of and most thankful for?
The support that the society has given me, the opportunities placed before me on so many different occasions. My gravesite is already sitting in Fort Rosecrans. I know where it is.
You know what kind of view you're going to have.
Yeah,
huh?
Number 325 in Columbarium 3A. So a democracy allows for all freedom of expression, etc. I got fed up with teaching about the activities of human beings as congressmen and all their corruptibility. So I began to move toward the theoretical in constitution building. And so I recalled to these kids all of their gifts that they have been given in the Bill of Rights. There were 22 of them at first. Then they went down to 12, and now they're 10. And I like to appoint all of those things, freedom of speech, press, assembly, petition. So you can understand this, Joe. You've got hands. You can choose any occupation you want as long as it's legal. And so you got feet. You can move around this country anytime you want. There's no borderline police stopping you going into Arizona. I appointed ideas about each one of those things so they could really understand what they're getting into and what opportunities are placed before them.
Well, and it hit me that you spent all those decades teaching these impressionable young minds about the Bill of Rights and about all the freedoms that they enjoy in this country. And they never knew how big a price you paid personally to secure those freedoms.
Yeah. I was three things. I was a soldier, I was an athlete, and I was a teacher. Those three things.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it didn't matter too much.
Well, it sounds like you did a pretty good job at all three of those.
I kind of focus on those. And mm-hmm. So today we focused on soldier.
A soldier whose actions continue to honor those 406,000 Americans who never came home from World War II. That is Tom Rice of Coronado, California. You've got to check out that video of his tandem jump in Normandy just this week for the 74th anniversary of D-Day. You'll find that on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com, where that podcast version of this episode also features a few bonus minutes with President Franklin D. Roosevelt's complete D-Day prayer. And I don't know if you've heard, but Congress has authorized the adding of the text of that prayer to the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. The nonprofit organization Friends of the World War II Memorial is raising money for that effort, and I have that cause linked for you as well at hometownheroesradio.com. We're out of time this time, but I don't know about you, I am looking forward to the difference that Arnold Gabriel and Tom Rice will continue to make as we march toward D-Day's 75th anniversary next year and beyond. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again on D-Day and every day that freedom is not free.